Hallmark Entertainment presents McBride, Fallen Idol. Daytime, a case is heard at a court in Los Angeles.
Your Honor, the prosecution presents a compelling, if flawed, assessment.
Flawed?
There is the question of mitigating precedent, which they have totally overlooked.
Your Honor, I have a dedicated team combing the books seeking any such precedent, and I can assure you, we haven't overlooked anything.
You won't find it in the books. Not yet.
A few rows back.
The Grayson Franks.
Best lawyer there is. Give me on the stand once. I'd rather have gone to the dentist.
Wow.
Thank you.
When I decided to quit the force, become a lawyer, Grayson helped me. It started. He couldn't have been more generous with his time.
Sounds like a terrific man.
One hell of a lawyer, too. The stealth bomber in a suit.
I draw your attention to paragraph 5. Where you will learn that the Supreme Court, which has been debating a very similar case, just issued its ruling yesterday on behalf of the plaintiff. Perhaps your dedicated team was too busy scouring the law books to stay abreast of the Supreme Court's ruling.
Considering the precedent initiated by the Supreme Court, this case is dismissed. The defendant is free to go.
You sail close to the wind, Counselor.
Only way to win the race, Counselor. As long as there is reasonable doubt, that doubt must weigh on the side of the defendant. That's the American way of justice. And what happened here today bears me out. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Grayson.
McBride, what a pleasant surprise. How in the world are you?
I'm fine.
You trying a case here today?
Earlier. We stuck around and watched The Master.
Oh, well, if I had known, I would have put on a better show.
Oh, that was quite impressive enough. You know what, speaking of talent, this is my associate, Phil Newberry.
Phil. Sir, it is an honor to meet you.
Well, thank you very much, but easy on the sir. It makes me feel old. Why don't you swing by the house for a glass of champagne?
Yeah, what's the occasion?
It was 40 years ago today I passed the bar.
Congratulations.
I invited the staff and, I invited the DA, but I think the DA has declined my invite.
Ugh. Listen, we'd hate to intrude.
Oh, don't be silly. It'll give us a chance to catch up. Come on. You too, Phil.
Great. You're looking fantastic.
The sun sets behind an opulent condo surrounded by palm trees. At the party inside, a senior lady greets the gray-haired McBride.
Mac?
Hi, Tracy.
Hey! Oh, it's so nice to see you. I can't believe you're here. You didn't tell me he was coming.
I didn't even know until I ran into him in the courtroom.
Yeah. Well, I know you boys have a lot of catching up to do. Don't be a stranger, Mac, okay?
They share a smile.
You are a lucky man, Grayson.
Tell me about it. So how's the law practice, Counselor?
Ah, it's fine. You know, I make enough money off some to spend time helping the little guy not get so crushed by the system.
Ladies and gentlemen, on this 40th anniversary, please join me in raising a glass to my boss, my friend, Grayson Franks.
Yes. Thank you.
40 years.
Thank you.
60-something Grayson mouths a thank you to blonde PA Kathy.
Be right back, okay?
Another blonde approaches.
Congratulations, Counselor.
Thanks, sweetheart.
That's Dee's wife, Rochelle.
Yes. They make a wonderful couple.
Very sorry I missed their wedding last year. I was up to my eyeballs in a murder case. Dean, he's still with Financing Partners?
Oh, yes. Doing very nicely. Made VP already. Handles all my financial affairs. I could not be in better hands.
Well, he is your son.
Congratulations, Counselor. Another notch in the belt.
Thanks, son.
Hey, Dean.
Mac, hey. Great to see you.
Congratulations on your marriage, by the way.
Oh, thank you. We were all sorry you couldn't make it, but we do appreciate the wonderful gift you sent.
Oh, what? You didn't receive a dozen toasters?
No, only three, but yours is the one we kept.
Very diplomatic of you.
Phil's with Kathy.
You know, I hope somebody looks at me that way someday.
Excuse me?
The way that you were looking at Mr. Franks?
He's a great man. Mr.
Newberry, you can call me Phil.
Well, Mr. Newberry, I've worked at several firms. I know the real thing.
Oh, I wasn't suggesting anything, you know.
This latest case, for instance, do you know that he got 4 continuances playing for time until the Supreme Court wrote its decision?
Wow, that's very impressive.
That's my husband. Oh, he loves taking risks. Right, Kathy?
Kathy smiles as Tracy heads off. In McBride's office, Phil's on the phone at his desk.
Yes, I met Grayson Franks. I was at his house for a party. I gotta go. Okay, I love you too. Bye-bye.
Let me guess, what is that, the 300th person you've called to tell them you met Grayson Franks?
She called me, it was my mom.
How sweet. Now you're sounding a little starstruck.
Mm-hmm.
Do me a favor, take a ride with me.
Where?
Have to take Jesse to the VET. It's time for his shots, and I'm gonna need somebody to help me distract him once he realizes where he is.
Okay.
Hey, Jesse, wanna go for a ride?
Jesse is a well-groomed, light-colored dog. Nighttime, Grayson drives his car along the highway. He switches on the stereo. Grayson, who wears an expensive-looking watch, accelerates and passes other traffic in his red convertible Corvette. Grayson arrives at the gates to his home and pulls up in front of them. As Grayson climbs out of the car and approaches the gates to remove a tree branch, someone lurches from the bushes behind him with a knife. Later, the flashing lights of an ambulance and some police cars cut through the night. A forensics team dusts Grayson's car for prints.
Roger that, we're still on site.
Grayson lies dead.
You said his wallet's missing?
A glamorous blonde detective.
So's his watch.
She stands up.
Look, I'm gonna go talk to the widow. Let me know when the coroner gets here.
The detective, Roberta Hansen, heads towards the house. Tracy sits in an armchair looking distraught. A maid shows Roberta in.
Thank you. Mrs. Franks?
Roberta sits down in a chair opposite Tracy, who holds a used tissue.
I'm Detective Hansen. I'm very sorry for your loss.
Thank you.
I know this is a difficult time for you, but I was hoping you could tell me how you discovered your husband.
Well, there's really not much to tell. I mean, I was pulling up the driveway. His car was blocking the gate, and I went up to see what was going on. And he was lying there.
Roberta nods.
I take it he wore a watch?
Yes.
It seems to be missing. Is there anything special or distinctive about the watch?
It's a gold Rolex. It had the initials GF engraved on the back.
Thank you, Mrs. Franks. That could be very helpful.
Daytime. In a pawn shop, the pawnbroker eyes a gold Rolex as a handsome young guy looks on.
You know a lot of these things are knockoffs, don't you?
Not this one, Grandpa. It's the real deal.
Yeah, maybe. Let me take a look.
The balding pawnbroker uses a small black magnifying glass. He spots the engraved GF on the back of the watch.
Yeah, you're right. Strictly kosher. This is an expensive watch for a kid. Where'd you get it?
My uncle left it to me.
I hope you appreciated him.
How much?
I can give you $5,000.
You gotta be kidding me. That thing's solid gold. It's gotta be worth at least 20 G.
Look, for all I know, it could be worth 100 G's. But good luck trying to find somebody who'd be willing to pay that much for it. $5,000, it's the best I could do. Take it or leave it.
Okay, fine.
Here, I need you to write down your name and your address.
Why?
It's the law.
Okay, okay. You got a pen?
The broker pulls a gun.
Yo, what?
Move 1 inch, and I'll take your head off of your shoulders.
You're crazy, old man. Look, just give me my watch, and I'm out of here.
Shut up. Put your hands on top of your head.
The young guy does as he's told. The broker dials a number on the phone. McBride sits at his desk reading some documents.
Okay, we'll pass on this one, Jesse. We don't defend slumlords.
He answers.
Hey, everybody, what's up?
Mac, I've been trying to reach you.
Oh, yeah? Why?
Have you heard the news?
What news?
Grayson Franks was murdered last night.
What? How?
Looks like robbery.
Thanks for calling.
McBride hangs up, so does Roberta. McBride stands and leaves his office looking troubled. At the police station, the young guy sits in an interview room. Roberta enters and reads from an ID card.
Is your name Juan LaBelle?
Yes. It's like I told the cop that arrested me.
Roberta sits opposite.
Then your initials aren't GF. Where'd you get the watch, Juan?
I found it. Look, the guy who owned it obviously doesn't care about it too much. It was just laying on the ground.
The guy who owned this watch was murdered last night. Do you know anything about that?
Look, I didn't kill anybody. I told you, I found the watch.
Then you have nothing to worry about.
Roberta gets up and leaves the room. Juan nervously watches her go. McBride's office, Phil answers the phone at his desk.
McBride & Associates. Hi, Roberta. Yeah, he's right here. Hold on. Roberta.
McBride's there.
Hi. Really? Good? Huh. Okay. Well, thanks for telling me. Bye.
He hangs up.
What?
She's holding a kid they caught trying to pawn Grayson Frank's Rolex.
Good.
Yeah. Went to his house, though. They didn't find any wallet, no credit cards, no money.
Probably dumped the credit card because they were too conspicuous.
Yeah. Maybe.
A slim brunette comes in.
Phil?
Yes.
Phil Newberry.
Marie!
You guys look like you know each other.
Yeah, we practically grew up together.
My mother told me you'd become a lawyer. To be honest, I was a little surprised.
Why?
Because you always said you wanted to...
Oh, that was a long time ago. Mac, this is Marie LoBel. Marie, this is my associate, Mr. McBride.
A handshake.
LoBel.
Mr. McBride, I'm sorry, am I interrupting?
No. You related to Juan LoBel?
Yes, he's my brother.
I didn't know about Juan.
He's the kid Roberta just arrested.
So you know the case then?
Yeah, the victim was a close friend of his.
Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't know.
Would you like to sit down? Please.
They sit around a coffee table.
Well, how do you two know each other?
Marie's mother was my family's housekeeper for years. She was like a second mother to me.
Huh. Mr. McBride, my brother may be foolish and a little wild sometimes, but he is not a killer.
And you thought that Phil might be able to help?
Not just Phil. I asked around about you too, Mr. McBride. He's innocent, and I want to make sure he's represented by someone who will help him prove that.
You must appreciate that I have a personal conflict here.
But my brother is not a killer.
McBride frowns.
Okay, I'm not promising anything. I will go talk to Juan.
You'll require a retainer.
We can deal with that later.
Thank you, both of you.
Don't thank us yet. I'm not making any commitments, except to go and talk to him.
That alone deserves my thanks.
Okay.
McBride's at the police station.
Why should I talk to you?
Because I'm here to help you.
That's what Marie said.
Really, you should listen to her. She's a smart woman.
I didn't kill him. I didn't do those things they said.
They caught you trying to hawk a dead man's watch.
I found it.
Okay. Let's say I believe you. How did you find a gold Rolex?
Me and my partner just got done tuning up this customer's bike, and I'd taken it out for a test drive.
A flashback to the night of the murder. Juan, wearing a black helmet, rides the motorbike to a stop by the side of the road. He spots the watch on the pavement, then dismounts the motorbike. Juan hunkers over the watch, then lifts the tinted visor on his helmet. He picks up the watch and regards it. As he stands, a calm-looking McBride appears before him.
So it didn't occur to you to turn such an expensive item into the police?
You kidding? Probably would have ended up on some cop's wrist.
Back in the interview room.
So I made a mistake. I shouldn't have taken the watch. But I didn't kill him. I swear.
I hope for your sake, you're telling me the truth.
McBride joins Phil in the waiting area at the police station. As McBride sits, Phil pockets an electronic notebook.
So, what do you think?
I don't know. On the one hand, you've got an impulsive, headstrong kid that could have seen the watch as a ticket to a new motorcycle.
Okay, so he tries to steal it, things go wrong, and he accidentally kills Franks.
Franks was stabbed 16 times. That's not an accident.
So what about the other hand?
It's like you said, riding down the street, sees a Rolex lying on the side of the road.
Which means what?
Frank's killer purposely threw the watch away, which raises the possibility that Frank's was killed for another reason. And the missing wallet and the watch were just meant to make it look like a robbery.
Murray thinks Juan is innocent.
Oh, really? No, that doesn't do us a lot of good right now. I want to go talk to Roberta. Get on your pony and get out to Juan's neighborhood. He works in some little motorcycle shop in Simi Valley. Check it out. Talk to some of the young kids on the street, you know? Sometimes people like him, they have to brag about what they did. Call me if you find it out.
Okay.
McBride heads through the station. Roberta looks up from a file.
McBride.
He heads over.
What's going on? I know you met with LaBelle. Are you interested?
He has a sister.
I know. I've seen her. She's very attractive, and she's too young for you.
No, she's not. I'm just too old for her.
Uh-huh. Are you taking the case?
Tell her I'd look into it.
And?
I don't know. Juan told me the same thing he told you, that he found the watch on the street in Brentwood.
At least his story is consistent.
Uh-huh.
Oh, don't tell me, please. Let me guess. You think it's possible that Frank's killer took the wallet and the watch and then decided to toss them away to make it look like a robbery, and that the kid came up the wrong street at the wrong time?
Roberta, brilliant deduction. Almost exactly the same as mine.
Forensics is coming up in about an hour. You want to hang out?
Sure.
An alleyway.
Juan Lobel run with you guys?
No. Juan doesn't run with us. He doesn't run with anybody. Only running he does is with motorcycles. He's a good guy. Check out Marco's garage on Sequoia.
Cool. Thank you, fellas.
Roberta receives a file in her office.
Thank you, Doctor. Oh, Mac. Forensics found Grace and Frank's blood on Juan LaBelle's shirt.
What? May I?
Sorry, Mac.
Now, come on, this says a trace of blood. If Juan were the killer, we'd be dealing with more than a trace. You saw Frank's body. The killer's going to be covered in his blood.
But this ties Juan LaBelle to the crime scene, and you know the DA is going to have a field day with this. Mac, you've got your hands full.
Yeah, well, haven't full before.
McBride looks at the file. A dark-haired guy, Marco, works on a motorbike in a garage.
Juan wouldn't do anything stupid like that. Besides, his sister would kill him if he stole anything.
You and Juan are pretty good friends, right?
Yeah.
He's good with motorcycles?
Almost as good as me.
Marco crosses the garage.
Look, Juan took a bike out for a test drive, came back here, then went home that night. That's all I know. He's a good guy. Ask anybody.
I will. Thanks for your time. Right.
McBride's with Juan in the interview room.
I think you should know. The man you're accused of killing? Extremely well-respected lawyer. The DA's office is going to want to close this quick, bring somebody to justice. Right now, that's you.
Henry said he was a friend of yours. Is
that true?
Yes, he was.
And why are you helping me?
Because I don't think you're a cold-blooded killer.
But they can't even prove I was there.
They found Grace and Frank's blood on your shirt. Any idea how it got there?
The watch was dirty. I guess I could have wiped it on my shirt or something.
Yeah, well, the DA would make a mockery of that explanation. He would say that the blood in your shirt put you at the crime scene. The watch in your possession gives you motive. And you tried to rob him. It went very, very bad, and you murdered him.
This isn't happening.
I need you to concentrate. That night, did anybody see you? Did you stop anywhere, talk to anyone?
No. I just rode the motorcycle.
Okay. We just have to work with what we have.
Phil enters a motorbike shop called Sun Valley Cycles, or SVC.
Customer Smith? Please come to the parts department. The parts department.
Phil scans around as he passes rows of shiny motorbikes.
Martin, come to the front desk, please. Martin, come to the front desk.
Pointing at a Triumph.
It's a nice bike.
It's a Triumph. Sweet ride. You interested?
No, not really.
I could do you a deal. She's a real honey.
Actually, are you Bernie?
Yeah.
I wanted to talk to you about Juan LaBelle. I'm one of his attorneys. You know him, don't you?
Yeah, I know him.
Will you tell me about him? What kind of kid is he?
He's a little arrogant and a little headstrong, but most of them are these days. Look, Juan eats breeze and lives motorcycles.
You know any of his friends?
A few. They're mostly other bikers like Marco, who drools over that Triumph.
Marco's the guy he works with, right?
Yeah. Yeah, they do good work together, tuning and repairing. Look, I always thought Juan was an okay kid before this happened. I trusted him. I even let him make deliveries once in a while. Shows how wrong you can be.
I'm hoping to prove that you're not wrong.
You think he's got a chance?
I wouldn't be here if I didn't.
So, what do you think?
I think Juan was in the wrong place at the wrong time. If I'd seen a Rolex lying on the side of the road, I'd have picked it up, too.
Yes, but you'd have turned it into the police to try to find its owner.
Yeah, maybe. I'm not sure what I would have done when I was 18 years old, though. So you found no prints at the crime scene?
No, but the kid was probably wearing gloves.
No tracks from the motorcycle?
No, but he could have parked the bike down the street or out of the way.
So he just picked a big house and hoped that when the owner came home, he'd be wearing expensive jewelry?
Where are you going with this?
Grayson Franks was stabbed 16 times. According to the MB report, half those wounds were post-mortem. That doesn't say robbery, it says psychotic frenzy. That doesn't fit Juan LaBelle.
So what are you gonna do? Bring in a shrink to testify?
No. I want to bring in Grayson Frank's killer. See you later.
Mac. Let me know if I can help.
Sure.
He offers a wry grin as he leaves. In McBride's office.
All right, let's think about this.
Think about what?
16 stab wounds. Half of them post-mortem. What does that say to you?
I don't know. Anger?
Anger, yeah. That's good. Hold on to that. If you were going to rob somebody, how would you do it?
Well, with no previous experience,
I... Hit him. Once. Knock him down. Take the watch. Go. Anybody who stabs their victim repeatedly like that is not upset about a robbery gone wrong. We've got to find out who else wanted Grayson Franks dead. Tomorrow, we should start gathering information on the family. Close associates.
Shouldn't you do that? You know the whole family.
Maybe not well enough. Every family has secrets.
Okay, I'll check out the family.
Phil's at Grayson's office.
Mr. Newberry, isn't it?
Yes.
You're early.
Well, it's a thing with me.
I'm in the middle of packing up some of Mr. Frank's personal things. We can talk while I work.
Sure, that's fine.
He follows Kathy.
So, to what do I owe this visit?
I'm hoping to understand Grayson Frank's state of mind on the day that he died.
And you think I can help you do that?
You were with him a long time.
6 years.
So you knew Mr. Franks well then? Did he have any enemies?
Not anyone that I can think of.
How about his behavior recently? Did he seem worried, scared, distracted?
Other than a typical male midlife crisis, no.
Midlife crisis?
You know, dressing younger, buying himself that fancy sports car. The silly thing is, women don't care much about a man's age until they make an issue out of it by overcompensating.
Nighttime, McBride stands awkwardly by the mantelpiece at Grayson's wake. Rochelle approaches.
Last time I was here, Grayson was still alive. Amazing, isn't it? The influence that one human being can have.
Especially him.
Yeah.
You'll miss him.
Me too.
Tracy spots McBride and heads over.
Mac.
Oh, hey.
I'm so glad you came.
Tracy. How you holding up?
Today's not my best day.
Mac?
Dean.
I appreciate the kind words of the church. But perhaps you'll tell me what prompted you to defend Dad's killer.
Dean.
Dean, your father was my friend. I just want to make sure that justice is served to the person who really deserves it.
You have doubts about the fellow in custody?
I think there are questions that have to be asked. And I, forgive me, I believe there are questions your father would have asked.
Maybe so.
Hunky Dean walks away.
I'm so sorry. I think he's not doing as well as he seems.
It's totally understandable.
Yes.
They regard a photo album.
Oh. Can't believe you kept that photo of our fishing trip.
Why, you were very special to him. No, he was very proud of you when you became a lawyer.
McBride closes the album. He and Tracy are alone on a sofa.
Tracy, I'm trying to get a full picture of everything that happened the day that Grayson died. When did you expect him home?
Normally around 7, according to traffic. But it was a Tuesday, and on Tuesdays, he saw Gail.
Who's Gail?
Oh, Gail Stanton, his chiropractor. He hurt his back about 3 years ago, skiing, wore a back brace.
I did not know that.
Well, no one did. He didn't want anyone to. Probably his worst flaw was his vanity. Having a bad back was like admitting he was growing old.
Tracy clasps McBride's hand. McBride puts his other hand on top of hers.
I'm truly sorry.
Daytime in Roberta's office at the police station.
Don't tell me anymore. Let me take a stab at it. Another woman.
A younger woman, if I had to guess. He buys a brand new sports car, one that must have been very painful for him to get in and out of with his bad back. And yet this report says he wasn't wearing his back brace that day.
So?
So, notice how unsexy a back brace would make a man look, especially if he was trying to impress a younger woman.
You're saying he left it off that day because he didn't want to be seen looking infirm or old? But wouldn't the brace have been hidden under his shirt?
Yes. Unless he was going to meet someone who was going to see him with his clothes off.
So your new theory is a jealous lover, or the jealous husband of a lover?
I don't think we can rule out an enraged wife either.
No.
In McBride's office...
I think this could just boil down to jealous rage.
The man was stabbed 16 times.
Well, I know that, but... You know, if you're right, you're not going to be doing his family any favors by airing his dirty laundry.
I know. And if I don't, what, Juan LaBelle goes down for something he didn't do? I'm going to go back over and talk to Tracy. Why don't you call Marie, see if she has anything she can add.
Okay.
We could use all the help on this one we can get, you know. Oh, you know what? Speaking of Marie, when we first met her, she said that when you were a kid, you had different aspirations. What did you want to be when you grew up?
I don't know. I don't remember.
Oh. See you later.
McBride leaves the office. At Tracy's house, the maid brings McBride and Tracy some fruit.
Thank you, madam.
How were things between you and Grayson?
Things were as they had always been between me and Grayson.
All right, well, I hate asking the next question.
Then don't.
But it's going to come up sooner or later.
I was at Vanley's boutique. They had a fashion show.
Thank you, Tracy.
You're welcome.
Hey, honey.
Hi. Hey, Dean.
Mac, any news?
Actually, he was asking me where I was the night your dad was killed.
You gotta be kidding. I suppose you're gonna ask me, too.
Yes. And anyone else who was close to your father.
I was at the family place at Lake Arrowhead. I mean, no one's used it much in the last few years, so Dad decided it was time to put the old place on the market. So I spent some time in the morning with the real estate agent.
Going through the multiple listings, looking at recent sales in the area.
Just reminiscing over the fun times we had there.
He holds Tracy's hand.
I left at 7 and got back well after it. It happened.
Thank you, Dean. Believe me, I know how very tough this is on both of you.
McBride is with Kathy at Grayson's office.
He came to work, left at 4:30 to see his chiropractor.
Yes.
Is that the suit he wore to work that day?
Yes.
So he changed his clothes?
Into something more casual. Nothing unusual about that, he always did. Unless he was meeting a client.
McBride gets up from the sofa and heads over to an expensive-looking dark suit which is hung over a tailor's dummy. A red tie hangs on a stand before the suit. McBride finds a black back brace.
It's Chris's back brace?
Yes.
Any idea what it's doing here? I thought he had to wear it all the time because of his skiing accident.
I guess he didn't wear it.
Mrs. Frank said his chiropractor's name is Gail Stanton. Do you have her number?
Sure. I can't believe how many years it's been since we've seen each other.
Oh, too many. Ooh, I'm just sorry it had to be under these circumstances.
Listen, I wanted you to know that Mac and I are giving this case our full attention. I also wanted you to know that I met with Juan's friend Marco. And is there anybody else that you can think of that I should talk to?
You talk to anyone, they'll tell you Juan's a good kid. We live in a bad neighborhood. I've spent every day of Juan's life trying to keep him out of this kind of trouble.
Did you see Juan the night of the murder?
Yes, he was working at the shop that day. And he was home before I went to bed.
About what time was that?
A little after 10, I think.
Did he tell you about the watch, or did he seem upset about anything?
He never told me about the watch. It was a little strange. You didn't do it, Phil. You have to help him.
We're doing everything we can.
An attractive brunette arrives at the open door to McBride's office. She carries a heavy-looking bag.
Would you be Mr. McBride?
Just as it says on the door. Dr. Stanton, I presume?
I do appreciate you fitting me in. I don't know of any chiropractors who make house calls.
Oh, well, many of my clients are very busy people. They have little spare time, and they don't want to waste it driving back and forth to my office. Nor should they have to. Where would you like me to set up?
Yes, well, I'm sorry, but I brought you here under false pretenses.
I don't know what you think, Mr. McBride, but I'm a chiropractor, not some backroom masseuse.
No. Oh, Lord, no, nothing like that. I know. I just wanted to talk to you about Grayson Franks.
Why would I tell you anything about Grayson?
Grayson was a very close friend of mine, and I just want to make sure that the person responsible for his murder is brought to justice.
Well, you could have told me that before I lugged this all the way from the car.
Yes, you're right. I'm sorry. May I? I just thought we could talk here more privately. Wow, you're strong. Would you like some coffee?
Sure. I take it black.
Okay, if you would sit there, please.
She sits.
Grayson was a good man who was in a lot of pain from time to time. I just can't help but wonder if he'd still be alive if he didn't cut short our session that day. Thank you.
You're welcome. What time did he leave you on the day that he was murdered?
He arrived at about 5 and was gone by 5:30.
It widens the gap.
What gap?
The time between 5:30 when Grayson left you and 8:15 when he was killed. Dr. Stanton, was your relationship with Grayson strictly professional?
I beg your pardon?
Sorry for being so blunt. But what I have recently learned about Grayson's personal behavior and the mystery of the timeline of his whereabouts from when he left you to the time he was killed certainly would have left time for...
A tryst.
Wouldn't happen to be you, would it?
It had been, but it ended over a year ago.
Who ended it?
Grayson. He said it was because of his wife. He told me he couldn't live with the guilt anymore.
You believed him?
Not for a minute.
So you think he stopped seeing you for another woman?
Absolutely. He wouldn't admit it, but I knew.
Any idea who she was?
Nope.
Make you angry at all that he left you for someone else?
Not at all. I knew exactly what I was getting into from the start. He was an exciting lover, and he ended up becoming a really good friend. And I stayed on as his doctor.
Any idea where he may have gone with his new girlfriend?
Well, sometimes he'd take me to the company apartment in the marina.
It's sunny outside. A gleaming silver pickup rounds a bend at the marina. Dozens of boats with tall masts are moored nearby. The pickup parks and McBride gets out, wearing a heavy-looking beige coat. McBride consults some notes as he strolls along the dockside, smiling vaguely at passers-by. McBride heads up some steps towards a modern-looking building with a first-floor balcony. Inside, McBride spots a startled Kathy.
Fancy meeting you here.
What are you doing here?
I was just about to ask you the same thing.
This is a company apartment.
So if I mentioned this place to Tracy Frank, she would know about it?
No, she wouldn't.
Right. And that's because Grayson used it for, shall we say, extracurricular activities.
How did you know?
Learning a lot about my old friend. Was it you?
Was what me?
The extracurricular activity.
No.
So, you're, closing the place up?
There's no reason for his wife to find out about the apartment. Grayson's dead, and I'd like to preserve his memory as the wonderful man that he was.
I, too, would rather Grayson be remembered for all of the positive things he did to help people.
Thank you.
But you've got to be completely honest with me.
What do you want to know?
Who his most recent mistress was? How long had it been going on?
I can't say for sure, but I had suspicions about 3 weeks ago in the office.
A flashback.
I was looking through some invoices to give to Dean when I came across a delivery receipt for a red dress from Banley's Boutique.
But it wasn't for Tracy.
I do all of Grayson's gift buying for Tracy.
Couldn't have been a special purchase that you didn't know about?
If it was for Tracy, it would have been delivered to the house.
And where was the dress delivered?
Here.
I must have bought this for somebody very special.
Is it so important to know who she is? It's over. Grayson's dead.
This woman could hold the key to who killed Grayson, Kathy.
McBride glowers at Kathy, who frowns. The pair of them head back along the dockside towards McBride's silver pickup. He finds a parking ticket on the windscreen.
They're very tough on parking around here unless you have a residence permit. That's why I'm parked around the block.
Great.
McBride takes out his mobile phone and dials a number as Kathy heads off around the corner.
Hey, Phil. All right, so I've got a task that needs a woman's touch.
Phil and Marie head for a clothes boutique in a trendy part of town.
I'm not an expert on dresses.
Okay, well, just leave everything to me.
Okay.
They approach the counter.
May I help you?
I hope so. I'm looking for a red dress, and I'm sure I saw one in here a week or so ago.
I think I know just the one you mean. It's a décorsé. He's very exclusive. In fact, this is a limited edition. We only had three, and this is the last one. It would look beautiful on you. The perfect complement to the perfect romantic evening.
Oh.
I'd hate to run into someone I know wearing it. You said you sold the other two? To whom? I mean, it'd be very embarrassing if it turned out to be friends of mine.
I'm sorry, that would be private information.
It's so beautiful. But I would die if I ran into a friend of ours wearing it. Let's go.
But just between us, okay?
The shop assistant looks up some information on the computer.
One was sold to Grayson Franks, and the other was to Tracy Franks.
By the pool at Tracy's.
I don't understand your preoccupation with this dress. Really, is it that important?
Well, it could be, maybe. So, you bought the dress for yourself?
Yes, I saw it in a window. I went back to get it, end of story.
Did you pay cash?
I used my personal credit card. It was a surprise for Grayson. He loves red. We were going to have a special dinner. I was going to wear it, and he never saw it.
Hi, Mr. McBride.
Hi.
Tracy, I think it's about time we left for the lawyers. Dean will meet us there.
Lawyers?
Reading the will.
Oh, it's just a formality. He left everything to me.
No.
Mac, I wanted to ask you if you could help me.
Hmm.
No, I mean, Grayson took care of everything legally, but I don't have anyone I trust. I would really like you to help me.
Right now that would be a conflict of interest, considering I'm representing the man accused of killing him.
I understand that.
After the trial?
Yes, please. We could have lunch and discuss things.
Sure.
Okay.
McBride waves them off as he gets into his flashy pickup. McBride puts a hand on his forehead, then reaches across and picks up the parking ticket from the marina. He regards the ticket closely. He grabs his mobile.
Detective Hanson.
Hey, Roberta.
Hey. Any suspects yet?
Several.
What do you need?
Am I that transparent?
Yes. I know you, Mac. No hidden agenda.
Well, good. Do me a favor and run a trace on any parking tickets given for the 16,000 block of Union Jack Mall in Marina Del Rey over, say, the last month. You know, and just do non-moving violations. Let me know when you get something.
Okay, Mac.
Bye.
Bye.
Wanders into Kathy's office wearing his beige coat. Kathy sits behind her desk.
You don't buy a woman a brand new dress just to rip it off of her, do you? You buy it to take her out somewhere first.
Excuse me?
You kept a record of all of Grayson's restaurant charges, yes?
Yes, of course.
And did he keep a personal day planner?
Yes. But I thought we were done here. I don't know what that has to do with anything.
Plenty, maybe, huh? Messy?
Kathy takes a blank book from a drawer and hands it over.
Thank you. Now, what I would like to do is cross-reference any entries he may have made in here with records you have in your computer.
Okay.
Thanks. First, we have the 8th, the garden room.
Schaefer and Schaefer, clients.
12th and the 14th, Fujiyama's.
Clients.
23rd, Donatello's.
Tracy, Dean, Rochelle. It was Rochelle's birthday.
Also on the 23rd, the 1910.
I don't have an entry for that.
The 1910, I don't know that. What is it?
A restaurant on Waverly. It's about 10 minutes from Grayson's condo. It's very discreet. You can reserve a private dining room.
Really? May I use your phone?
Kathy looks awkward.
Hey, Phil. Have you had lunch yet?
You want to take line 4, Detective?
Detective Hansen? What? When did it come in? Get a warrant.
The interview room.
They're going to convict me, I know it.
Hey, I'm going to do my best, all right, to make sure that doesn't happen. All right, I know this is boring, but I'm going to go over it one more time. Where did you go after you took the motorcycle out for a ride?
Went home. Because my sister, she says she can't sleep until she knows I'm safe in the house.
So you rode the bike home?
No. It's a customer's bike. I mean, I shouldn't have even had it out that long. Actually, I rode it back to the garage.
A flashback as Juan returns to the repair shop and puts his crash helmet down on the workbench. He takes out the Rolex and regards it.
So you were in the garage alone?
No. Marco was waiting for me to bring the bike back.
Marco enters.
Hey, man, how'd it go?
Huh?
The bike, bro, the bike. We tune her good?
Yeah, Marco. Real smooth. Look, I gotta go. My sister's gonna be on my case if I'm not in by 10.
Cool. All right, man. I'll lock up.
I know how people look at me, Mr. McBride. It's like no matter what I say or do, this jury's still gonna look at me like I'm some punk in a gang. And I would never, ever kill someone. At least fall over some watch.
And that is what I'm going to prove. Okay?
I hope so, sir.
Okay. More details.
Roberta arrives at the closed-up repair shop.
Marco, remember me, Detective Hansen?
Sure. What's up?
I've got a warrant to search Juan LaBelle's tool chest.
What for?
Just show me the tool chest.
It's right here next to the wall.
Roberta and a uniformed officer enter the garage. Roberta opens the drawers of Juan's red tool chest as Marco watches nervously behind her.
You got a key for this?
No, Juan has the only one. You want to break it for you?
No, we'll handle that. Go ahead, Sean.
Roberta dons rubber gloves.
What do you think you're going to find in there?
Just tools, I hope.
The officer uses bolt cutters to break the padlock on the top drawer. Roberta opens up the top of the tool chest and peers inside. She removes a white cloth and unwraps it. Roberta finds a bloodstained knife and lifts it by the handle. Marco looks wide-eyed. Phil sits in his parked car.
Hey, Phil.
Hey, Mac.
Anything interesting?
Well, the maitre d' at the 1910 confirmed that Grayson Franks did indeed have dinner there on the 23rd, and he was with a woman.
Could you describe her?
She's wearing a red dress, dark glasses, and a red headscarf. He couldn't even really see the color of her hair. Do you think that's the dress from Banley's?
Has to be. I'm beginning to think this woman is a phantom. So, we'll finish this later. I got Roberta on the other line. Hi, Roberta.
Mac, you better get over here right away. We need to talk in person.
Okay, fine. I'll be right down.
At the police station, McBride sits in an office off the waiting area. Roberta brings the knife in a clear plastic bag.
It's an exact match to Grayson Frank's wounds, and it's got his blood on it. Definitely the murder weapon.
You found this in Juan's toolbox?
Right, so.
Any prints?
Nope. Wiped clean. Should have seen the DA when he found out. Looked like he just scored the winning touchdown.
How did you know where to look?
We got a tip.
From who?
An anonymous caller.
Well, that's convenient. an anonymous caller tells you that the murder weapon is in my client's toolbox.
I don't know, Mac. Maybe Juan LaBelle was foolish enough to brag about what he'd done to one of his fellow gang members.
Juan doesn't belong to a gang.
That doesn't matter, Mac. The DA is going to tell the jury that not only was Juan LaBelle caught trying to pawn the victim's watch, but that the murder weapon was found among his belongings. Oh, and don't forget Frank's blood on LaBelle's shirt.
That was on the watch. He thought it was dirt. He wiped it off on his shirt.
Oh, please. Good luck getting the jury to believe that.
But they're supposed to believe that he disposed of the wallet, tried to hock the watch, wiped the fingerprints off the handle of the murder weapon, didn't throw it away, didn't even remove any of the blood, and then put it in his own toolbox? No, that doesn't fly.
Juan paces the interview room looking anxious. He wears an orange boiler suit.
There couldn't be a knife in my toolbox. Why would I put a knife in my toolbox?
Well, that's where the police found it, covered in Grace and Frank's blood.
I don't know who that dead guy is or anything about him. Who's doing this to me?
You try to hawk his watch, you're the easiest target.
I'm sorry I ever found it.
Let me ask you something. How good a friend is Marco?
The best. We've known each other for years. You think you put that knife in my toolbox? Don't be crazy.
No, the police had to cut the lock off. Does Marco have a key?
No. We use separate toolboxes.
Wouldn't think a lock like that would be too hard to pick.
Wait a minute. A couple of months ago, we stumbled across this guy who had lost his motorcycle key. Marco unlocked it in 15 seconds. I mean, he even started the bike for him so he could ride it home to his spare key. Nah. Marco wouldn't do that. He's my boy.
Tell you what. Let's make sure of that.
Phil parks his dark gray Chrysler Crossfire convertible in the driveway outside Marco's repair shop. He climbs out of the car wearing a pair of sunglasses. Marco cleans a motorbike.
Go! Remember me?
Juan's a lawyer. How's he doing?
Well, he'd be doing a lot better if he weren't being blamed for something he didn't do. You found the murder weapon, didn't you?
No. No. The cops did. They stayed here the whole time. I had no idea.
This is the Triumph from Bernie's.
Yeah. I bought it a few days ago.
Wow. You're asking like 20 grand for this thing.
I beat him down to 17.
Business must be good.
I do okay.
At SVC.
So you sold the red Triumph recently, right?
Yeah, I sold it to Marco 3 days ago.
He give you a sizable down payment?
No down payment. He paid cash.
He paid cash for the whole thing? It surprised you that he had that much money on him?
Hey, somebody waved $17,000 under my nose. I don't ask questions.
Well, thanks. There's no way Marco Delgado's ever gonna tell us where he got that much money.
Especially if it was a payoff for planting the knife in Juan's toolbox.
But Marco and Juan are friends.
Sometimes money makes a better friend.
How do we get Marco to talk?
Where we live, there's a strong gang culture. They covet their territory and keep a sharp eye on whatever goes on without permission.
Marie smiles and nods her head.
I have an idea.
Marco's garage door is flung open by gang member Pancho.
Hey, Marco. How's it going?
It's okay.
It's only going okay. Here you scored big.
Pancho wields a baseball bat.
Nice bike. The one Bernie had for sale. Where'd you get the money for it?
It's none of your business.
In this neighborhood, everything is my business. I asked Bernie. He said you paid 17 large. In cash.
So what?
So where'd you get that much money? You got something going in the neighborhood that I don't know about? Something you didn't think to share with me? I don't like being left out in the cold, Marco. Makes me look bad.
What do you want?
A percentage of what you're making.
You nuts? That's extortion.
Consider it protection. So no one damages your new motorcycle.
No, wait, don't. I did someone a favor.
For 17 large? Must have been some favor. Who is this someone? Maybe I could do him a favor too.
I don't know. I didn't meet anyone. It was just a voice on the phone.
Man or woman?
I don't know. It was disguised.
How about when they paid you?
It was dropped off at a trash can in the park.
They put 17 grand in a trash can for you. Now that I think of it, maybe it's the engine that's wrong.
25! They gave me 25 grand, all right? I still have 8. I'll split it with you. Just don't hurt the bike.
Split it? You held out on me, Marco. I'll take it all. Consider it a lesson not to hold out on me again. I'll be back in the morning to collect, one way or another. Understand?
Yeah.
Good.
Marco stands alone looking nervous as Pancho leaves and shuts the garage door. Outside, Pancho approaches Marie and Phil.
Thanks, Pancho.
For you, Marie, anytime. Juan's a good guy.
She kisses Pancho's cheek. He wanders off. Later, Phil and McBride are in the office.
Could you stop pacing, please? You're making me nervous.
Hurry up.
Look at this list. I'm supposed to hack into every single one of these bank accounts?
Well, we're going to find out which one withdrew $25,000 from their account in the last couple of weeks.
Can we just go back and lean on Marco some more? I mean, do you know what's going to happen to me if I get caught hacking into banking systems?
You know what? We'll tell them you were trying to open an account online and just got lost. Come on, besides, you're good enough not to get caught. And even if we can't use what we find in court, it could very well point to Grayson's killer.
This is going to take a lot of time.
Trial starts Monday.
Then I have till Sunday night.
Mm-hmm. This afternoon. We've got to get back to the garage, convince Marco to testify that he was paid to put the knife in Juan's toolbox.
Well, you're quite the motivator.
McBride and Phil burst into the repair shop. They scan around. The bikes are gone.
Well, looks like Marco decided to take a hike.
Now what do we do?
Well, he's riding a red Triumph. Shouldn't be too hard to find. Look, do me a favor. Call Roberta. Ask her to put out an APB for our friend Marco. I am going to go visit Tracy and brace her for what's in store.
What is in store?
Exposing her late husband, someone I admired, as an adulterer.
Oof.
Under a bright sunny sky, McBride's silver pickup hares along the highway. McBride parks outside Tracy's house. He follows Tracy into the kitchen.
It'll be quieter in here. So, this isn't a social call, huh? Too bad. Grayson would have loved knowing you were taking good care of me. Jeez.
Thank you.
No more questions?
No.
Oh, good.
I'm very sorry that I have to do this, Tracy, but I'm going to need to expose Grayson's philandering in court.
What do you mean?
Tracy, he was unfaithful to you, but you already knew that. Believe me, if there was any other way.
How did you know?
The red dress.
A flashback to the dress shop.
Mrs. Franks.
Hello.
What a pleasant surprise.
How are you today?
I'm great, thank you.
Oh, don't you just love this dress? I bet it looks gorgeous on you. Your husband has exquisite taste.
Yes, he always did.
What can I get for you today?
Well, actually, this. Oh, it's for my daughter-in-law. She's going to Italy with Dean, and I really thought she might like to kind of show this off.
How romantic.
Yes, this dress certainly does say romance, doesn't it?
The assistant smiles at Tracy.
So, was that a signal, a warning to him?
Yes. Mac, please. No, if not for me, for Grayson.
The last thing in the world I want to do is tarnish Grayson's reputation, Tracy, but there is a young man's life at stake.
Yeah, I know, but what's it going to prove?
That Grayson wasn't killed for his Rolex. Or his wallet, that it was a crime of passion, and that probably it was someone close to him. How did you find out about the dress?
Kathy told me.
Kathy?
She had seen the delivery receipt when she was dealing with his expenses.
And then she phoned you to tell you that?
She did.
A flashback.
Hello?
Hi, Tracy, it's Kathy.
Hello, Kathy, what's up?
I just had to call you and ask, when are you gonna wear it? I can't wait to see that dress. I'm sure it's exquisite.
What dress?
The new dress Grayson bought for you at Banley's. The red DeCourcy? He's such a great designer. I can't wait to see you in it. Oh, my gosh. It must have been a surprise, and now I've ruined it. I am so sorry. The receipt says it was delivered 2 weeks ago. I thought he would have given it to you by now.
Did that make you angry?
Not really. After 30 years of infidelity, you get used to it.
McBride arrives in the reception at Grayson's offices.
I'm sick and tired of you not trusting me.
Then give me one reason why I should.
This isn't jealousy. This is outright paranoia.
Kathy comes out into reception and scans around. She approaches McBride, who raises his eyebrows.
Family misunderstanding?
It started on the phone. Again. Dean hung up on Rochelle. She came down here, again, to try to explain.
Explain? What?
He thinks she's cheating on him.
Seems to be catching. She come around here often?
She used to come by here every once in a while to see Dean. If he wasn't here, she'd pop in and say hello to Grayson.
Rochelle storms down the corridor.
What would you do with an impossibly jealous husband?
Made sure I always had a cast iron alibi.
That's exactly the kind of thing Grayson would say.
Rochelle!
Dean runs over.
She went that way.
Doesn't matter. It's just a small family discussion. We'll finish it later.
That's what's great about marital conflicts. Single people argue, but married people just have discussions.
Right. What can I do for you?
Well, Dean, actually, I came by to see Kathy.
Look, McBride, I know you're just doing your job defending that young man. I respect that. Dad would have done the same. But it doesn't mean I have to like it.
What do you want, Mr. McBride?
The condo. How did you know that Grayson used it for things other than clients?
I was his personal assistant. Maintaining it was my responsibility.
How personal?
What are you implying?
May I be direct?
More direct than usual?
Did you have an affair with Grayson?
That's not direct, Mr. McBride. That's disrespectful.
Do I take that as a yes?
No, you can take that as I'm not going to dignify this question with a response.
Kathy frowns at McBride, then turns on her heels and marches into her office. McBride follows and finds Kathy packing a box file.
Kathy, listen to me. An innocent young man is going to go to death row unless I can find out who killed Grayson.
What does that have to do with exposing his personal life?
Everything. Grayson was not murdered over some robbery. It was a crime of passion. Someone he was involved with, or someone connected to that person, killed him. I will not stop until I find them.
You sound just like Grayson.
A tearful Kathy sits down heavily.
It was extraordinary. He was tender, exciting, funny. You knew the man.
I thought I did.
McBride sits down opposite Kathy.
Well, it must have been tough on you continuing to work with him when you knew he was seeing someone else and had stopped seeing you.
Who said it stopped?
What about his wife?
Tracy never knew.
Wouldn't be so sure about that.
Do you know who he was seeing when he was killed, or had he come back to you?
He was seeing someone else. I don't know who she was. He would cool it with me, and I would know that there was someone else. He was like a child with a new toy.
Ah, but this time it was different, huh?
No.
New sports car, fancy new clothes, attempts at regaining his youth. Maybe this time it was serious. Maybe this time he wasn't going to come back to you. That's why you told Tracy about the red dress. Kathy, you told her about the dress. Because you were jealous? Because you knew Grayson had bought it for someone else?
A shiny tear runs down Kathy's face. McBride enters the Los Angeles courthouse. A few people sit in the gallery behind the counselor's benches. McBride dumps his briefcase and sits next to Phil at the defender's bench.
Hi.
You okay?
And I was thinking, if we pull this off, Grayson Frank's reputation will be tarnished forever. People will forget the brilliant jurist he was and only remember the skirt-chasing adulterer. I've helped destroy the reputation of a man I admired. The irony is, I'll be doing it for what he cherished most and fought for all his life. Justice.
Case number 104628, The People versus Juan LaBelle. Mr. Travis, your opening statement.
Thank you, Your Honor.
The prosecutor stands.
Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, this is a case of a brutal murder perpetrated by a callous killer who coveted his victim's wristwatch so much more than his victim's life that he stabbed his victim 16 times to steal the watch. The prosecution will present irrefutable evidence that the stolen watch was found in the defendant's possession. Most damning blood, the victim's blood, was found on the defendant's shirt. And the knife that forensics experts have already proven to be the murder weapon was found in a locked toolbox to which The defendant has the only key, the facts. Speak very clearly to the defendant's guilt.
Gray-haired Judge Cooksey.
Mr. McBride.
Thank you, Your Honor. Well, that was a very compelling, albeit inaccurate, statement by Mr. Travis, so let me clear up any confusion. The only thing my client, Mr. Lobel, is guilty of is finding a very expensive watch and not turning it into the police. Juan Lobel did not murder Grayson Franks. And we intend to prove it.
This is the knife that you found in the defendant's locked toolbox?
Yes.
And we've already heard from forensics that blood found on this knife and the blood found on the defendant's shirt are a DNA match to the deceased Grayson Franks. Thank you. No more questions.
Your witness, Mr. McBride.
Detective Hanson, how did you come to find the knife in Mr. Lobel's locked toolbox?
We obtained a search warrant and broke the padlock. Once the box was open, the knife was in plain view.
What prompted you to obtain a search warrant?
We received an anonymous tip that the murder weapon was hidden in Mr. Lobel's toolbox.
An anonymous tip? Didn't find it strange that an anonymous caller just happened to know where the missing murder weapon was?
It's not uncommon to receive information from sources who wish to remain anonymous.
I see. Was this person a man or a woman?
A dispatcher answered the call. I reviewed the recording a few times, and in my opinion, it could be either.
Really? Why is that? Was the voice, disguised?
From what I heard, I believe that's a possibility.
Objection, Your Honor. Detective Hanson is not an audio expert.
Sustained. Keep it moving, Mr. McBride.
Yes, Your Honor. So, this anonymous caller with a potentially disguised voice just happened to know that Juan Lobel had put the knife in his toolbox.
Objection, speculation.
Sustained.
Your Honor, in order for the caller to have the tip, they had to have known the knife was in the toolbox.
But as Detective Hanson doesn't know the caller, she cannot speak to his line of reasoning.
That is correct, but thank you for acknowledging that the caller did know where the knife was.
Gentlemen, if you don't mind, I will run this court. And any further outburst between either one of you, and I will cite you both for contempt.
My apologies to the court, Your Honor. I was merely trying to point out that the anonymous caller could have been involved in planting the knife.
I believe you made your point. Do you have any further questions for this witness?
No, I do not, Your Honor.
Kathy's on the stand.
Ms. Brown, how long were you Grayson Frank's personal assistant?
6 years.
Fair to say you knew him well?
Very well.
You were privy to his personal, as well as his business affairs?
Yes.
All of his affairs?
I'm not sure I know what you mean.
I'm talking about his extramarital affairs.
Objection. I fail to see the relevance of this line of questioning.
I promise you, Your Honor, if you allow me to continue, I will show a clear line of relevance.
Overruled. You may proceed.
Grayson Franks own a condominium in Marina Del Rey?
Yes. It was for the use of clients.
That was its only purpose?
Your Honor, he's badgering his own witness.
No, Your Honor, I'm not badgering. I'm trying to establish that Grayson Franks had a secret life and that someone connected with that life had a much more passionate and personal reason other than robbery to murder him.
Overruled, but I better see the payoff pretty soon.
Isn't it true that Grayson Franks used that condominium to conduct sexual affairs with a number of women? Ms. Brown? You're under oath.
Miss Brown, please answer the question.
Kathy scans around nervously.
Yes.
In fact, you knew Grayson Franks to be a serial adulterer, did you not? And you had firsthand knowledge of that because you knew that because...
Kathy faintly shakes her head.
You knew that. Because as his personal assistant, there were things he couldn't hide from you.
Yes. Yes.
No further questions.
Your witness, Mr. Travis?
No questions, Your Honor.
McBride and Phil return to their office and sit behind their respective desks.
Actually, I thought we did all right today.
We established an opening. All right's not quite good enough, though. Travis still holds most of the cards. Hey, any progress on the bank records? We could use a Hail Mary pass right now.
Like I told you, I farmed some of the work out to old hacker friends of mine. Let me just check my email here. Oh, wow.
What?
Quick, come here.
Phil points at the screen.
Look.
I love Hail Mary passes.
What can we do with this? We can't use it in court.
Well, depends how you play it. First Monument Bank of California. Do me a favor, get over there and get as many brochures as you can with their name on them.
Good idea.
Night falls. In the office, McBride wearily drops a file on his desk, then picks up his phone.
Hi, Roberta. It's me. Listen, did you have any luck with that parking ticket information I asked you about? Oh, sorry, I didn't even check the fax machine. All right, dear. Thank you.
McBride gets up and heads over to the fax machine, which is located behind a glowing one-armed bandit. McBride finds a fax and returns to his desk with it. His expression changes to a slight frown as he reads the fax. The next day in court.
Mr. Delgado, what do you do for a living?
I service and repair motorcycles.
With Juan Lobel, right?
Yes.
Your friends, correct?
Yeah.
Do you share things, like tools?
We have our own, but sometimes, yeah.
So if you needed a specific tool that wasn't in your toolbox, you could ask Juan to borrow it, correct?
Yeah.
Unless he wasn't there, or unless his toolbox was locked?
Yeah.
So, if he wasn't there, you couldn't get access to his tools, right?
No, I couldn't.
I hear that you're pretty good with a lock.
Objection, speculation.
Your Honor, if Mr. Travis will allow me to finish my question, I think he'll find that there is indeed no speculation.
Overruled for the moment.
Mr. Delgado, isn't it true that you recently assisted someone with unlocking their steering column on their bike and starting the engine of their bike without a key?
Yeah. The dude lost his keys. He was so grateful he gave me a 20.
And isn't it also true that you and Mr. Lobel share the same obsession with motorcycles?
Yeah.
Phil, may I?
Phil returns to his seat. McBride gets up and approaches Marco.
Mr. Delgado, didn't you just buy a motorcycle? Brand new Triumph.
Yes.
Ah, a $20,000 price tag.
I got him down to 17.
Good for you. Do you take a loan out to pay for the bike? If you can't remember, we can ask the gentleman who sold you the motorcycle.
Objection, relevance.
Your Honor, I promise relevance will be perfectly clear once Mr. Delgado answers the question.
Overruled. You may answer the question.
No, I paid cash.
Whoa, that's a lot of money.
I work hard.
Indeed. You must. Because isn't it also true that just a few days prior, you had in your possession $25,000?
Who told you that?
Is it true?
I saved that money.
I take it you have bank records to that effect. Too hard a question. Well, we'll ask an easier one. If you had that much money laying around, why did you wait so long to buy the bike?
I was making up my mind.
Oh, of course, I see. Well, yeah, just coincidental that you had $25,000 just prior to the murder weapon being found in Juan's toolbox, and yet you waited until that very day to buy the motorcycle. No more questions.
Juan eyeballs Marco on the stand.
Miss Franks, how long were you and your husband married?
It would have been 30 years in May.
Would you describe yours as a happy marriage?
Well, all relationships have their ups and downs, and ours was successful because we survived both.
Did you know about your husband's extramarital affairs?
Yes. I wasn't aware of the other women until we were married nearly 10 years. But now I know that they were always around from the beginning.
Did you ever confront him about his infidelities?
No, not directly. I probably should have, but I just found it easier to just get back at him in subtle ways.
Like wearing a dress identical to one that he had bought his mistress?
Oh, it seems so petty. I just wanted him to know he couldn't fool me anymore.
Would you?
McBride hands her a clean handkerchief.
No more questions of this witness, Your Honor.
Mr. Travis, your witness?
Mrs. Franks, did any one of these women cause harm to your husband, assault him, make death threats, send angry letters?
No. No. When my husband was at his worst, You couldn't hate him. The women couldn't help it. Everybody loved Grayson.
Thank you.
The witness is excused.
Dean, I know what a terribly tough time this is for you and your family. Again, you have my deepest sympathies.
Thank you.
A few questions I have to ask, just for the record.
Of course.
Let's start with the obvious. Where were you the evening your father was killed?
I was at the family lodge at Lake Arrowhead.
All day?
Until about 7 in the evening.
Then you drove home?
Yes.
It's about a 2-hour drive, put you back in L.A. sometime after 9, depending on traffic?
That's about right.
Are you aware of the condominium your father owned in Marina Del Rey?
Yes. I handled the purchase.
Oh. Do you utilize the condo?
No. No. I haven't been there since we closed escrow a few years ago.
McBride nods, then retrieves a document.
I have here a report from the Marina Del Rey Traffic Division. It states that a parking ticket was issued outside the condo to a 2006 Corvette owned by your father, Grayson Franks, on the day he was killed.
That has to be a mistake. My father had a parking space in the underground garage.
That's what I figured, too. I talked to the management company. They said that the gate to the underground parking was out of service and that it was being repaired between 4 p.m. and 6:45 p.m. that day.
Well, I don't think the parking ticket means anything now.
Odder still. Another parking ticket was issued outside the condo on the same day to a 2006 Porsche with a personalized license plate that read Rochelle. Is that your wife's car?
That's a mistake. Well, she's not even aware of the condo. We bought it before I even met her.
Phil returns to the court.
Your Honor, may I have a moment to confer with my associate, Mr. Newberry?
Yes.
Phil heads through the whispering crowd in the seats behind the counselor's benches and hands McBride an A4 envelope. McBride tips the contents into his hands. Marco swallows nervously and Dean watches anxiously from the stand as McBride goes through the contents of the envelope.
Mr. Franks, do you know Marco Delgado?
I heard his testimony. He works with the man who killed my father.
Your Honor.
The stenographer will strike that last comment from the record, and the jury is instructed to do likewise.
Earlier, Mr. Delgado testified that he paid $17,000 cash for a motorcycle just days following your father's murder. He testified he could spend $17,000 because he had saved $25,000.
Good for him.
Do you bank at First Monument Bank of California?
Yes.
McBride reads the documents.
On the 26th of the month, the day before the murder weapon was found in Juan Lobel's toolbox at Mr. Delgado's windfall, you withdrew $25,000 in cash from your account. Is that correct?
Yes.
Why?
I needed it for a business investment. It's what I do for a living.
Don't make me do this.
Dean fixes McBride with a steady glare. McBride hangs his head, then lowers the documents and looks up.
You gave that money to Marco Delgado, didn't you?
Why would I do that? I don't even know him.
You gave Marco Delgado $25,000 to plant this knife in Juan Lobel's toolbox.
That's a lie. You're implying that I...
Tracy stares.
You're implying that I killed my own father.
Yes, I'm afraid I am. Because you discovered that your wife was having an affair with him. So you came back early from Lake Arrowhead to check on them.
A flashback as Dean pulls up at the marina in an SUV. Dean holds his face in his hands as he spots Rochelle's Porsche parked nearby. In the courtroom, Rochelle starts to sob. Tracy looks round at her. Rochelle rushes out of the courtroom.
Rochelle, please!
So you followed your father, parked in the dark, and waited for him.
A flashback. Grayson exits the car at the gates.
Oh, what the heck is this?
Dean?
Damn you! Damn you to hell!
Dean stabs Grayson repeatedly as Grayson falls to the floor. Dean takes the watch from Grayson's wrist and removes Grayson's wallet from his trouser pocket. Dean drives away from the scene in his SUV, then slows on a stretch of road and lobs the watch from the vehicle's window onto the pavement.
And even after Juan LaBelle was arrested, you didn't come forward with the truth. Instead, you paid his best friend, Marco Delgado, $25,000 to put this knife in his toolbox.
Dean's lips tremble as he starts to speak.
I'm so sorry. Mother, please forgive me.
Tracy?
No.
McBride stops Tracy.
This court will recess until such time as we can entertain a motion for dismissal of all charges against the defendant, Mr. Juan LaBelle. Meantime, I expect to see both counsel in my chambers in 30 minutes.
Later, McBride leaves Judge Cooksey's chambers with Juan. The crowd has left the courtroom. Phil, Roberta, and Maria there.
Here he is!
Juan. Thank you, Mr. McBride.
You're very welcome.
Thank you, Phil.
Juan, you're most welcome. Take care of yourself, all right?
Yeah, thank you so much. Phil?
Take care, man. You good?
Juan hugs Phil, then leaves the courtroom with Marie. Roberta approaches McBride.
Well, I don't know how you did it, Mac. You got to the truth, even if it hurt.
Yeah, this one did, too.
What led you to Dean?
The red dress.
Yeah, Kathy gave Grayson's delivery receipt for the dress to Dean because he handled all of his father's finances.
And when Dean saw the receipt and realized that Rochelle had that dress in her closet, he knew she hadn't bought it.
Yeah, with Grayson's penchant for red and the arguments that Dean and Rochelle had been having, Dean put two and two together and came up with an affair.
So it was Kathy's giving the delivery receipt to Dean that set things in motion?
Yeah.
You're amazing.
Oh, gosh. But you know what? The parking ticket information you gave us, that sealed the deal. Hey, we still make a good team.
You bet. I'll see you around, Counselor.
Detective.
Bye, Phil.
Roberta heads out through the low swing door to the public seating area.
So you think you might take some time, get reacquainted with Marie and Juan?
Yeah. It's been a long time.
Maybe you guys can talk about what it was you wanted to be when you were a kid. Come on. What did you want to be when you grew up?
You promised not to laugh?
Why would I laugh?
I wanted to be a ballet dancer.
Really? You know what? I used to tap when I was a kid.
You did?
Uh-huh. And it's never too late, you know. Tell you what, I'll buy you a tutu for Christmas.
McBride smirks.
Ballet. Wanted to be a ballet dancer.
ITFC audio description by Alex Newman.